As an entrepreneur, you need to be leveraging tools and software to run your business as smoothly and efficiently as possible. That is why I'm delighted to partner with Sage for this season of the pod. Sage is the global market leader for technology that helps small and medium businesses perform at their best. To learn more about Sage, go to sage.com or click the link in the pod description.
For us, it's about creating the best product. It's so challenging because people are not going to dilly-dally in the oil care aisle. They want what they want and they want it like as cheaply as they can get it. And I get that. I want someone to look at my product and know exactly why to use it.
Hey everybody, it's me, Gary Fox, and this is The Entrepreneur Experiment. I'm delighted to be joined by one of the guests I've had on my shortlist for a very long time. Lisa Craven is the co-founder of Spotlight Oral Care, and their story is one I've wanted to feature for ages. It is an incredible story how Lisa and her sister and co-founder, Vanessa, set up a oral healthcare brand that has now gone global. In the last 6 years, they've had explosive growth, and Lisa lays it all out for us here in today's chat. So without further ado, here's my chat with Lisa Craven, the co-founder of Spotlight Oral Care. Lisa, welcome to the pod.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
I'm delighted you're joining me. You've been on my hit list for a long time.
Ooh.
That sounds quite sinister, actually. You've been a much requested guest for a long time. There we go. That's much better.
Yeah, so good to be here. Thank you.
So Lisa, for anyone not familiar, who are you and what are you working on?
Yeah, so my name is Lisa Craven. I am the founder, co-founder, along with my sister, Vanessa Craven, of a company called Spotlight Oral Care. So we are sisters and dentists, and we've created a range of oral care products that basically reflects what we know to be true as dentists. And then you can have these amazing products to buy in your pharmacies and supermarkets and a lot of stores near you.
It's a very powerful story.
Yeah, like I think, you know, Vanessa and I started Spotlight with, you know, very little expectation, you know, very little expectation in ways, but honestly, we could see such like the potential of what we could do. And we started out with one product like 6 years ago, and now we have a full range of products and we sell across Ireland, the UK and the US. So it's been really exciting as a journey, and you know, we're very much still beginning, and we have great fun and a lot of work, obviously, but great fun as well along the way.
How did it start, though? That's the obvious question, because it's such a powerful story. I remember reading about it years and years ago. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's a great story. But how did it all kick off? Like, how do you go from working in a dentist practice to launching your whole own range?
I think, you know, it was Vanessa's idea first, you know, about the product. But I think really when we look back, it was probably kind of very natural for us, because I mean, I had qualified, you know, just as the recession hit Ireland, and I was working in a practice, and I worked for another dentist for about 2 years. And then I set up my own practice when I was about 24, 25. And, you know, it was like the middle of the recession, nobody had money, and I could see a lot of dental practices kind of, you know, reducing the level of services, maybe team members. You know, it was very challenging for private healthcare for everyone. And I really wanted to create a better opportunity for my patients, like, and a practice that I wanted to go to. So, you know, I wanted to have Invisalign and sedation and all the best treatments, because I used to always go to the US to train, and I would see all these amazing treatment options, and I come back and I'm like, okay, I want to do this and this. And so I had been in practice for about 10 years, well, maybe about 8 years at the time, and Vanessa had just qualified. So Vanessa's like about 6 years younger than me, and Vanessa qualified and came to work for me after about a year. We worked together, and we'd always be thinking, okay, what do we, should we open another practice? Should we, you know, do this? Should we do that? And Vanessa originally came to me with the idea of teeth whitening, because she was looking, like, she was being bombarded with, you know, beauty products. And actually, when you look at the oral care industry, she was like, there's nothing that I really am excited to use, and I'm a dentist, you know. And we worked in Galway, so there was so many young college students looking for ways to whiten their teeth. that they want to do in their own home, didn't want to spend a huge amount of money. And actually, the very reason we brought out the very first product was that we looked to see what products were available in pharmacies. And there was literally nothing, no active ingredients in any product that would ever possibly whiten your teeth. And we know what whitens teeth, we're dentists. We've been doing it for years. And that's why we're like, okay, we can definitely do something here. You know, if this is the level and the standard of products that are out there, we can definitely create something that is far more valuable to customers, that's actually going to create really good results in a safe way, and it's not going to damage anybody's teeth. So that's where we started, you know, with Spotlight.
And how do you go from there to seeing your product on the shelf? Because it seems like a massive jump.
It is. And it took, I would say, like 2 years to really bring that product to market. So by the time like you think about a product, and we knew exactly what we wanted to have in terms of ingredients and what we didn't want to have in terms of ingredients in the product. And it took about 2 years to really be happy with the ingredients, be happy with the formulation, the delivery, the messaging. Like, I have so many issues with the oral care industry in general. And as a dentist, like, you know, you're trained to provide healthcare advice. And I often find that, you know, the oral care industry is really like kind of very trend led. And so actually we really wanted to take it back to basics and really create a very good product that actually worked, that would, you know, create really good value for our customers.
Mm. And where do you start? Okay, you've got your idea. Where do you even begin? I mean, you had probably industry expertise, you probably had deep industry knowledge, but when you and Vanessa were like, right, okay, we've got this good idea, how do you make things like that a reality? Because I think that's the stage that a lot of entrepreneurs fall down on. They're like, they have the idea, but maybe not the expertise to bring it to market. What was your first kind of couple of steps?
And I think when anybody is setting up or starting a business, the most important thing I think to know is that you're going to have advantages and you're going to have disadvantages in terms of your own skill set. Like, you're always going to know a little bit more about the next person and maybe you won't know anything about the next topic. So obviously we knew how to create a product. So we basically got online, reached out through like Enterprise Ireland for manufacturers. We worked with, you know, scientists to basically make sure the active ingredient was at the right level, that was at the appropriate level, that the formulation was correct. And it's also then, you're also a consumer. So you want to make sure that when you're using the product that it's really comfortable. So it's not just about creating a one product. It's creating a product that's easy to use. It's creating a product that is intuitive to use. It's creating a product that, you know, you can use along with other things. So it's not just the ingredients, which, you know, Vanessa and I would know exactly what to put in products. It's the whole system. And then how you package it. What do you want someone to feel like when they pick up the product? You know, what do you want? Like, who are you as a brand? Are you like this really clinical medicine? And we never really wanted to be overly clinical, because in my experience, I think overly clinical sometimes is very distancing and people don't feel like they can access like a product. So we wanted to feel friendly. We wanted it to feel like a treat, like a beauty product, not necessarily a dental product. And so that's where we, you know, we went through those steps. But honestly, it took us about 2 years from start to finish to actually have in our hand one product that we were happy with, that we were ready to order.
There's so much to it. Even listening to you there, like even the branding and the messaging, the feel and the look of a product, like that's, a lot of it's intangible and a lot of it's very, very complex. How did you figure all that out, especially as first-time founders?
Yeah, and you know, it's such an evolution as well. So like, you know, even the product we've created now, like we're like, oh my God, after a year, I was like, I hate this product. Let's get rid of this. This is awful. So it's, and that's the one thing as well, like you have to be flexible and you will grow and mature and your products will grow and mature. And like, even now we're looking at, you know, a slight rebrand coming maybe next year. And I think you have to be kind of obsessed. And like, I was totally obsessed with packaging. And we worked with an amazing designer as well, who was just freelance, who was like a friend of a friend. And he really helped us. in terms of creating the product. And you can see it was amazing because I could see how other people work. Like, I'm a dentist, so all I ever see is, you know, dentistry. And then I got to see how graphic designers work and like that creative process. And I just loved that side of it. Like, I'd never had an opportunity to even see people really working in that creative way. And I loved that and loved working alongside, you know, the graphic designer saying, okay, let's try this, or what about that color? Or, you know, this is how I want someone to feel. So there's so much in it. And I think the worst thing to do is to rush that part of the, you know, product development. Like, you need to get the product right. And there's no point doing anything else until the product is right. And then as you go on, you know, your customers will use the product in a certain way and will tell you, actually, I like this, or I don't like this part about your product. And you have to be really open to that advice as well, saying, look, I actually think this doesn't make any sense. Why don't you say it this way? Or, you know, and so we're very close to our customers. We talk to our customers a lot. So it's very... it's always evolving. A brand is like, it's like a life, you know what I mean? It's changing all the time, and the situation, the environment is always changing. And so you have to kind of move along with it, but always then make sure that you're kind of staying true to who you really are.
How did you walk the line? Because hearing you talk about the brand, you're so passionate and getting it right. How did you walk the line between getting it right and it taking too long? As in, at what point did you go, okay, now it's go time?
That's because I have my sister, Vanessa.
Ah, okay.
Who's like, it's go time, Lisa.
Yeah, okay.
Come on, move.
That makes
so
sense.
She's really like, okay, let's go, go, go. And we we're very similar in ways, but we have very different personalities in ways. So she's really like, very like, go, go, go. What can we do? And like, it was honestly, you know, it was her idea. And it was, you know, her, like, she would be always pushing us, okay, we need to think about the US, like, let's, and I would be like, if that was me, I'd be like, we're not ready. And she'd be like, no, we have a product, like, and then you pick each other up along the way. So sometimes if she's thinking, oh my God, what about this? This isn't, you know, I'm not confident about this aspect, and we push each other along and kind of motivate each other. But I think that's where having a co-founder, like, I don't know how people do it on their own. Like, I would find that really, really difficult. And it's just so hard to have all the skill sets because, you know, you need to be a driver, but then you also need to be sensitive and listen to your team. You know, you need to have time to be creative, and then you need to have a head for logistics. So we kind of split out the company, depending on our personalities. And then it allows us to kind of work in a space that kind of suits each of us.
Talk to me about that, because partnerships and people working together, that's like often the hardest part. They're like, everyone else is like, oh, the business is the easy part. This person that I work with is the hard part. How do you work with your sister, and how do you divide out the roles?
You know, I think Vanessa and I are so alike. I think the most important thing is that we have same values. Like, we really like the same things overall. Like, we are very family orientated. You know, I have four children. Vanessa has one child and a baby on the way. And so we have very similar values. We're very close to the rest of our family. And so that's kind of makes you like very similar. And then I think we trust each other. You know, we trust each other. I trust her if and I let her make a decision on a certain aspect, and then she will let me make a decision on other aspects of the business. And I kind of know what she's good at, and she knows what I'm good at. And we're so close that, yeah, of course we have arguments. Like, of course, we don't even argue. We just basically, like, we're so close. Like, we're beyond that, you know. But I think it's that trust factor. Like, we have each other's back. Like, and people, you know, often say to us, like, but do you really spend that much time? And I'm like, yeah, we work together all the time. And we actually go on holidays together too. Like, we're like peas in a pod, you know. Yeah. We just kind of, we're like that with the rest of our family as well. So we have another sister and another brother. They're both dentists. And, you know, we spend loads of time together. Like, we get on. And
it just
and
flows.
That's part of it. Yeah. It just does. And you have ups and downs. But that's actually a real relationship, is when you can be like, oh, look, whatever, and, you know, have an argument and then move on. But, you know, at the base of it, you know, we're very loyal to each other. You know, we trust each other. And we basically were like, I'm not going to do that, or that's not, you know, in my job description. Like, we had, you know, it's like whatever needs to be done, we will do it. So we're not kind of shrinking violets either. So whatever.
Were you ever worried at the start of going into business with family? Did ever kind of like go, oh, is this a good idea?
But I think we'd worked together in practice. So I knew,
okay. Yeah.
I knew what, you know, I knew how we worked together. I knew like the kind of, that kind of relationship, although it's kind of slightly reversed in that it was kind of my practice. And so I was the boss, and now she's kind of like, she is the leader really of Spotlight, and I'm more like her second in command, but she is, and it's not, I don't say that in a, you know, it's just, there is a natural leader, and she, in a project, and she's, you know, she definitely drives the company forward. And then, you know, I'm probably more involved in like teams and like, you know, the packaging, the branding, the marketing, that aspect of it.
That's what I wanted to ask you. How did you divide out the roles? Because I think in early stage companies, it can be quite difficult. It can be a bit of a mishmash of who's doing what, and I want to do this, I don't want to do that. How did you divide that out?
Yeah, and I think that takes time to figure out. Mm. I think you're not going to figure that out on day one, you know. But I think that, you know, people do, and I do think it's very important if you have a co-founder that you do have different skill sets. There's literally no point having two people who can do the same thing. And there is so much to do. And so I look after all the branding, marketing, like the design of the packaging. Now that's kind of, we have our own NPD team now that kind of like looks at that, but still we really, really involved in that. And then, and I look at a lot of the marketing, and then Vanessa would look at like new product development in terms of like operations and logistics and new product development, like creating products. So Vanessa's like, she's qualified top of her class. She's incredibly smart. And she like really, she just, if something needs to be done, you're just never going to get in Vanessa's way. Like, you know, I was like, have you ever seen Vanessa try to get through an airport? I'm like, she's just like, she's gone. Like, she's just, what she wants, that's it. She's getting it. And so she's very focused, she's very smart. She knows exactly what, in terms of ingredients, what she wants, what she doesn't want, formulation. And she really kind of, you know, has a good team around her as well in order to bring products to market.
You have a big focus on sustainability in the brand. How did that come about?
Yeah, that was something that, you know, really from the very beginning, Vanessa and I were super passionate about, but to us, it felt like a really normal thing. Like now, I think when you look at brands, it's just, for me, it's normal to support brands that are being sustainable, to be more sustainable, and to choose brands that are, you know, ethical in terms of their values, their sourcing, their production. And actually, you know, I think when we looked into the oral care industry more, we became even more motivated, because a lot of people don't realize, like, the oral care industry, you know, toothpaste in particular, as an example of an oral care product, is something that, you know, we use our whole lives, every day, morning and evening, our whole lives. But actually, when you look at toothpaste and how they're manufactured, they're normally associated with deforestation. Like, they're involved in the palm oil industry, child slave labor. Like, they still use the cheapest type of plastic to package their toothpaste, laminated plastic. And the only reason that they, you know, that these choices are made is that it's cheaper and it's easier to do. And so when we're creating a new brand, are we going to really add to this issue? Are we really going to create, you know, another brand that is contributing to 1 billion toothpastes in the US alone, ending up in landfill every year? I mean, that felt really, really wrong. I mean, until recently, toothpaste had little bits of plastic. So those big brands that always say to you, you know, this is the brand that most dentists recommend, whatever. you know, until recently, they had little bits of plastic in their toothpaste as a bulking agent, and only until we could see so much plastic building up in our marine life. And these are tiny little bits of plastic, so when you ingest them, they don't actually ever get excreted from your body, so they build up in your body. So when we talk about exposure to plastics, you don't expect it to come from your toothpaste. And then, like, the EU will bring out a directive saying, now, stop putting plastics in our toothpaste.
Don't be naughty.
Okay. Don't be bold. You know, in maybe 17 years, those players will say, okay, we'll have 20% of our toothpaste free from plastic in 7 years' time. You know, that's not good enough.
Everyone listening is out running to their bathroom to see what toothpaste they have.
I'll tell you a fun fact. The lining of your mouth is 50 times more absorbent than your skin.
Wow.
So if you care about what you put on your skin, you should care about what you're putting in your mouth, what you're putting in your children's mouth every morning and every evening. You don't use, there's so few products, you use so much that can be so easily absorbed directly into your bloodstream. So it's not going into your stomach. We have all these amazing, you know, metabolism pathways that can remove toxins and things like that. When something goes directly into your bloodstream, you have no protection against it. So it's really important that you're using products, and it's that accumulation of ingredients. So there's things like SLS in almost all toothpaste. And as dentists, we don't like SLS because SLS, if you get ulcers, which 25% of the population do, it exacerbates ulcers. It makes your tissue thinner. It creates more inflammation in your mouth. And the only reason that SLS is in toothpaste is to make it foamier. You know, it's not good for you. There's DEA, there's propylene glycol, it's an antifreeze in your car. Like, when we look at skincare and how clean our food industries, our skincare industries are, and then you look at oral care, it's the same products that's been there for 40 years. Now, you think about the food you ate 30 years ago, or the creams you used 30 years ago. You would not be using them because they're not good enough. They're not fit for purpose. And it's the same in oral care. Like, what I used to find is so frustrating is that you have two big options. You've got those big mass market products that do have active ingredients. So as a dentist, I'm always going to tell you, look, you have to use something with fluoride in it, but it's got a whole host of other ingredients that you don't want. And actually that is damaging your overall health, and they're not recyclable. And then you've got your good for you products, you know, like all of these natural products. Like, they're just, no dentist ever recommends them because they're just not good for your health. So there should be a brand that has clinically proven active ingredients that target the individual needs of customers without all of those nasty ingredients and in recyclable packaging. And that's where we wanted to create that conversation point about why you use toothpaste and who should use it and why it shouldn't impact the rainforest so you can brush your teeth. And the thing is, it's tricky to get over the line. It's tricky to get a toothpaste that has, you know, that is made from sugarcane and to contain active ingredients, but it's not impossible. And if two people from the west of Ireland can do it and, you know, launch into 9,000 stores in the US, well, guess what? So can the bigger companies, you know, so they can make the change too. And they should, and they need to. And I think that, you know, I sound like kind of slightly crazy when I talk about it, but people have no idea. And then what I really don't like is that sold that message of, well, you know, we're very reputable and trustworthy. And all you have to do is Google it, like Google Amnesty International calling out these huge oral care companies because they're, you know, participating in child slave labor. It's outrageous.
Things have changed a lot though in 6 years, even since you started. So, I mean, to be kind of ahead of the game 6 years ago, brands are only kind of starting to adopt it now as what you adopted way back then. Was it difficult though, Lisa, back then to get this message across and to get it on the shelf?
I think, you know, we just started very, you know, slowly. And it was funny because I thought it was going to be, you know, it's, and you know, who's going to want it? And will people want to take it in their stores? And the first place we went to was pharmacies in Ireland. And of course, you're talking to a pharmacist. They know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay.
They know exactly what you're talking about when it comes to ingredients. And buyers, you know, in retailers, in pharmacy, like, I've so much love for Irish pharmacies because, you know, when you travel all over the world and you go into an Irish pharmacy, you're so educated, so trained. They have the best products. And, you know, they know exactly why they're picking your product and putting it on a shelf, you know. And retailers, yes, they have now a social responsibility to pick products that are sustainable, that are ethical, that are really meeting the needs of them in terms of a social responsibility, because they also know, you know, their customers need to have these options when they go in store. So I think, you know, we've literally gone from retailer to retailer and expanded so quickly, I think, because of the support that we have received from our retailers and from our customers in terms of our own website.
So that's how you got on the shelf. You went literally and sold it into pharmacies across Ireland.
Yeah, just rang them. You know, people look something. How did you get here? I'm like, oh, I'm just very simple. I'm like, I just Google the phone number and just ring them. You know,
but that's hard. People don't want the hard thing. They want to be like, hello. Yeah. People want the easy solution. Yeah. Going, oh, I just did it this way. Everyone's obsessed with kind of just online. So you just rang them. Hey, there's a new brand, and literally hand to hand combat one by one.
Yeah, and then in Ireland, there's like groups of pharmacies, and then eventually, obviously, we have you know sales teams on the road now, and you know reps that can drive education and awareness, and but you know it's very important to us that when you know our reps on the road that they're really educated in terms of oral health in general. So,
okay.
You know, whether we can do an education piece about oral health or children's oral health, it's not necessarily just all product. It's about creating value again for pharmacy teams about oral health for the family. But yeah, and so now our teams are really, you know, obviously hugely educated when it comes to oral health and why our products. And honestly, I know our products are best in class, and I can talk about my product for a stat. I'm like, I know why this is better. Like, cause doesn't have these things, and it does have these active ingredients, and this will actually, you know, improve your gums. And these are the five clinical research pieces that prove this ingredient works. You know, it's not like, oh, this is a charcoal toothpaste that is based on complete nonsense. There's literally no science or data behind it. And that's the whole thing, is that we want to create products that are really based on science and research, because as dentists, that's what we do, and not based on the latest trend or, you know, like kind of nonsense statements. Because yeah, like it sounds like just funny, but actually people make poor choices when it comes to their oral health if they're not informed and educated. And oral health is about, you know, awareness and education. And I don't think that it's actually right that companies bring out products that are, okay, they might not work, you know, they might not create results, but actually they're damaging. So like,
and people are creatures of habit as well. They'll, once they make that decision, they'll just stick with it, because it's just default. In we go. I've used this forever. It's one of those products. Do you remember seeing your product on the shelf for the first time?
I do. I used to go in like maybe a few times a week just to look at it. Oh, look at it. It's just so cute.
That magic moment. What did it feel like?
It's amazing. And you just feel like, you know, it's kind of like, it's amazing. Like you, because there's so much work that goes in behind the scenes in terms of creating a product, and like the amount of work that our team puts in, like, and that we do, that it looks right. It works, you know, it's going to meet the needs of our customers. Like it's an incredible feeling. And when you start to go abroad and you see it on other shelves, it's just like, you know, it's amazing. It's really amazing. And it's the product of a team behind it that gets it there.
And what was the first year like then, after getting it into a couple of pharmacies? What was that kind of journey for the first year?
So like Vanessa and I we really stopped working as dentists like only like a year ago.
Okay.
So we have been working full time and doing this, you know, part time for a long time, you know, and that, you know, it gave us the freedom that it wasn't putting so much pressure on us then. Like, as in, we didn't, obviously there was like, you know, there was no salary or anything. We were just putting everything we had back into the company. And that gave us kind of a freedom to put more into it. But really, we knew it was coming to the point where we had to actually give the opportunity what it needed. And so we went full-time probably like a year and a half, just as lockdown hit, really. We decided, look, this is, the practice had closed for 4 months, and, you know, let's just go for this. We can actually create more change, like for more people, by creating products than we can, you know, working in practice. And so we still are involved. I still like am in and out of practice all the time, but I don't see as many patients as I used to at all anymore.
Okay. I'm amazed at that. That's kind of blown my mind, if I'm honest, because it's such a massive brand. I think people listening would be like, wait, what? What am I doing in my life? Working one job. How did you do that though, Lisa? That's phenomenal to be like a dentist. It's not a simple job. Like, you're not punching in and punching out. You know, you're not sitting in front of a laptop all day. How did you balance that?
We just worked all the time. I think dentistry is great.
Give me the hack, Lisa. Give me the hack. Don't tell me it's really hard work.
There is no hack. Yeah.
That's what everyone thinks.
One job's like part-timers, like, you know, and I know everyone wants balance and everything, but it depends on what you want. And also when you absolutely love and you're obsessed with what you're doing, you just want to do it, you know? And so I think with dentistry, it is like it's not a job you can dip in and out of. You can't really, you know, you have to be there for your patients. You obviously have to provide a high level of care for your patients all the time. And that you actually do have to be very available. But once you're actually finished in work, you know, you're actually finished. You know, I'd had the practice for 10 years, so I had a really good team in the clinic who could help me with the admin and stuff like that. But, you know, short of me being with my patients, I totally focused then. When I was away from them, I had time in the evenings and lunchtimes and things like that to focus on Spotlight. Mm. And so, yeah, look, it was really hard. You know, I'd had like 2-3 children as well while doing it. And so it was really hard. It was really hard. It was the hardest part about Spotlight was the first few years where you're trying to work. You know, you're really trying to figure out a business and owning a business and owning a brand that you have no experience with that. So trying to figure that out, that was really, really challenging. And then having small families at home and traveling a lot. But I don't know, Vanessa and I never felt that like it wasn't going to work. It was never a fear that it was never going to work out. So we just kept moving forward. And maybe being in the practice gave us a little bit of, you know, comfort, you know, as well.
It's an interesting parallel. Like, was that a release valve that just allowed you to de-risked it, depressured it, but equally the strain of managing too? Like, it's a really hard trade-off, I think.
It is. And, you know, you also have to be practical. I mean, I was married with 3 kids. I can't exactly turn around and go, by the way, I'm just quitting my job. And I had a practice of my own. I couldn't turn around and say, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. You know, I have responsibilities and like commitments, and, you know, I wasn't going to like shirk them. So the only alternative for me was to work more, you know, just to work evenings, weekends, and to do that. So that's what I did. And that's what Vanessa did. And I think we had each other as well. Like, we would travel together. So a lot of times, you know, traveling together, you know, it's good fun as well. So, that makes it easier to do things like that.
The loneliness is the thing that entrepreneurs commonly cite, of just being on your own, because in those dark times, you're like, I'm not sure this is ever going to work. You have someone else. But what's interesting there is, and I love hearing stories like this. This is what I love about the podcast, is that everyone always thinks there's just one way. There's only one way. Oh, go all in, burn the boats, you know, all those cliches, those horrible, horrible startup cliches of, oh, you have to be all in. And I love hearing it, because it's different for every single entrepreneur. That's the beautiful part of it. And you can make it work if there really is a passion there, and that you can tell just from listening to you, the passion for the brand is huge.
I think as well, I feel like, without getting too like woo-woo, I think a business has its own momentum.
Yeah.
And you can try and force the business, but it has its own momentum, and you have to be there when it needs you. And there's maybe 4 months where it doesn't need you that much. Now, at the moment, obviously, we've like a bigger team, but at the beginning, maybe it was enough that we worked part time and we didn't force it or rush it. We just created a product, put it out there, let it breathe, you know, like listen, learn, without having to feel like you had to do it all straight away, you know what I mean? And I think our personalities could be slightly like that, so I think it was good that we worked, and we had another job, and this was what we did. It was definitely our passion, but, you know, we gave it a minute to figure it out and to go, actually, let's do this, let's try that, because you think that you have an idea of where it's going to go, and it's just not going to go there. Could go somewhere way better, you know, could happen 6 months later. And there's so much luck involved, and timing is everything. So I think the business itself, just don't force it, don't rush it, just let it be and care for it, you know, and then, you know, it'll take you where you want it to go.
I love that, because you're exactly right. Like the cycles, there's cycles. Sometimes you just can't hurry up things. You know, it takes X amount of time for a product to be developed, and there's an inherent impatience in entrepreneurs. Everyone wants it. You all kind of want it done now. And like for you, you're kind of describing like a calm intensity. intense periods of work followed by calm when things are just happening. So when you launched your first product, what was then the evolution? Did you kind of go, okay, one product is great, what's better than one, two? Or how did you grow? Because 6 years is a very short time. I know it's a long time in certain ways, but it's a very short time to have grown at the scale you've grown. What was behind that growth?
And it is that it's just a lot of work in the background, you know, a huge amount of work in terms of, you know, we created one product. And I think, you know, creating the product, like we started out as Spotlight Whitening, where we just had whitening products. Mm-hmm. And then, as I said, we looked at the oral care industry, was like, we have to do something here. Like, this is actually, like, we feel like, you know, an obligation to do something here. So we rebranded to Spotlight Oral Care. And that kind of encompassed obviously more of an oral care, like a health focus as well. And like set our kind of intention in terms of being more focused in terms of oral health in general and not so just on cosmetics. So, you know, once we had one product, we literally launched it and it took off like immediately. Like it was just, I think it was just really, it gave us the boost when we saw how well it did when we launched it. And that gave us more confidence to create products that we felt were needed, you know. And then, as I said, in the background, you know, you're going to trade shows and some trade shows you go and it's just like, you know, soul crushing, you know, like I remember going to a trade show in LA and I'd left like my baby who was like 4 months old. And it was just like the retailers that we needed to see or that we wanted, you know, didn't really want us, you know, and they were small, niche, really cool retailers in LA. And then at the end, you know, like we would have one like CVS buyer and they'd make a decision like that and it would be like amazing. But so many of those, you know, so many trade shows, they're just not the right vibe. They're not the right time. They're not the right retailer. So a lot of hit and miss, like you're going to trade shows, you're reaching out, you're talking to people, you're hiring teams and you're kind of like reorganizing your team and things like that. Like what you start with is nothing compared to where you are in 5 years' time. Like we have probably 50 plus people now.
Wow.
On our team. And like that's in itself is like, you know, finding the right people who suit you and work well together and you suit them. And so it's just so much work on so many levels behind the scenes. It's not just about creating a product and putting it out there. It's like, what does the product look, feel like? How does it go out? Who does it go out to? You know, why is it there? And then like, how can we, you know, I always think also that like oral care is not exactly, it's not like skincare or beauty where people want to try 50 types of mascara. They want to try. People don't want to try 50 types of toothpaste. They really don't. And so for us, it's about creating the best product, the best experience. Like it's so challenging because people are not going to dilly-dally in the oral care aisle. They want what they want and they want it like as cheaply as they can get it. And I get that, you know, and to make it the language pop and to make it like, I want someone to look at my product and know exactly why to use it. Used to drive me crazy when my patients will come in and practice and say, bleeding gums. Look at this ingredient, you know, chlorhexidine, and they'd have to look in the ingredients. Why doesn't the product say on it, this is for gum disease, this is, I have bleeding gums, instead of calling it something really clinical and technical. So I wanted all the language to pop. So all that work behind the scenes is of like, why is it this way? Let's do it this way. Let's try it this way. And maybe we didn't like it that way. Let's try it a different way. You know, tweaking, always looking at it and always changing things and not kind of accepting like, the way things are, you know, pushing forward all the time. And it is like that. It's lots of different things that you have to push forward in order to make it successful.
I like hearing that though, about the trying and failing and trying and failing. That's kind of the whole ethos of this pod. But I think people might look at you and go, 6 years, wow, they've just gone like that. Just straight up growth, you know, up and to the right, the old cliche of the hockey stick growth. But to hear you kind of go, look, it's soul destroying and it's tough and it's tough and it's tough. But there's a certain sense of just continual momentum from you. Like, is that inherent in you and Vanessa, or was that learned as you went along? Or how did you sustain, I guess, I'm trying to come up with the word here. How did you sustain that self-belief and momentum?
Yeah. And I think we've always had that belief from the start, is that for me, you know, when I look at the oral care industry, I see the space. Like I see, I mean, you look at skincare and you look at how many amazing brands that are doing such great work driving education and awareness. I guarantee you, if I ask my friends what skincare they use, they know exactly what they use. They know exactly what ingredients, what order, their 7-step routine. I get it. They're not as informed when it comes to oral health. They have no idea. Should they use a mouthwash? What are we really supposed to floss? Toothpaste, it's all the same. It's like saying your cream is all the same. And oral, you know, oral health is health. It's healthcare. You know, like the health of your mouth directly impacts your body, your heart health, your literally your blood level, your blood sugar levels. It is such an impact on your health. And you cannot have a beautiful smile unless it's healthy. You know, so I want people to be more informed and more educated, you know, and to actually create education. And I think oral care in particular is very ostracizing. People don't want to talk about it. They're embarrassed. There's shame. They do not want to. They're like, oh, you know, how many times have been a night out when people are saying, oh, my tooth.
Oh, like, no.
You'd be nervous to say that to your dentist. And, you know, we should be able to talk about these things. And a brand, you know, we need to drive that education and drive that awareness and make people feel more comfortable. Like, we just released a children's sonic toothbrush, you know, and a lot of times people say, oh, kids, you know, oral care, really? And I'm like, the biggest reason children go under general anaesthetic in Ireland is because of oral disease. Like, wow. This is an issue, you know, like decay in children is a big issue. And so I can tell you in probably 3 tips how to not have decay for any of your children. And that's a big deal. You know, that's a big deal. And there is no oral care brand talking and providing information and education for customers and patients. And I think that's outrageous as a dentist. Like, it's health. Health is all about accessibility. It's all about having the right information to make an informed choice. And it also makes people feel really empowered when they come in. And the amount of people who used to come to me as a dentist and cry and be so embarrassed. And I'm like, it's literally my job. But somebody has made you feel, or culturally we feel embarrassed. And
is that an Irish thing?
Why? It's not really.
No,
it's more global. Of an Irish thing, because we have such a cultural kind of history of never going to the dentist, and we see our school dentist probably twice in 15 years, and that's deemed an appropriate level of care. It's not. Like, it's not. And you know, when people know better, they do better, they make better choices, they have less oral health issues, and people are more proud of their teeth and actually will go on to take care of their teeth better.
How do you juggle all this, Lisa? Do you juggle, and maybe talk about how you did and how you do now, how did you juggle like 2 jobs? As in, how did you plan out your week? People listening to the pod love to kind of understand busy entrepreneurs, how they manage their time, because time management is probably the thing that isn't talked about as much as it should be. How did you manage and plan out? Was there specific routines or schedules you had, or how did you literally make sure you got it all done in a set of 7 days?
I think it's about prioritizing. You know, it's about being very clear what your priorities are in that moment, and your priorities might change in 6 months, you know. And I think that sometimes, you know, I have so many things that I like to do. What are the 3 things I absolutely need to do today? And that would make me feel so much more productive doing the things that I needed to do. I go to bed early and I get up early. You know, I have small children, so that's pretty much enforced upon me. But it's, and I don't necessarily get to see my friends as much as I would like to. It's the one aspect of my life that I don't get to see my friends as much as I would like to. But I know that I can't work in the evenings, and then with maybe 2 evenings I have, I'm not going to walk away from my kids. I'm just not going to do that. I can't do it. I wouldn't be able to do that. So I try to prioritize and spend time where I need to spend time right now. And I know in 10 years, they might not be my priorities. You know, I might have more flexibility. And I think if you kind of sit down and organize your priorities, then you don't feel so guilty about the, you know, all the things you're not doing, because you're not going to get to do everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't have 4 kids and work and travel and be on 2 time zones and go out at the weekend and, you know, do all of the other niceties. You just can't do that. So you just prioritize. And then I think if you literally sit down and write it out, okay, these are the things, like I do prioritize where I can exercise as well. Prioritizing the things, like those aspects of your life, it gives you a sense of calmness that you're like, okay, but I've done the things I said I would. And actually, when you write out all the things you're supposed to do in your day, it's unachievable for almost everyone,
yeah.
You know? And I think that, you know, there's so much pressure to do all of the things that it's just, you know, there's seasons in life. And like I, as I said, have four small children and I have a business and I have employees and team members that I feel, you know, really responsible for as well. And my family. And that might be, you know, and my friends. And I obviously have, you know, my friends. But you cannot do everything in one go, you know. And I think just being real about that. And maybe it's, you know, you're taking 5 minutes to take a meditating journal and not an hour long morning routine. And that's okay for you right now, you know.
I like that. Do you plan out weekly, monthly, or how do you actually physically do it?
I know I'm week to week because I can't think that far ahead. And I think it's as well, it's about getting real about the support you need. Like I, my husband's very supportive. My family are very supportive. And I'm very lucky that I have people who help me. So I plan week to week. I decide like, what do we absolutely need to get done this week? And that's how I approach it. Because I also think if you plan too far ahead, for me, it just it stops making sense.
We had a couple of questions sent in. Actually, I'm going to actually read them out to you now. Someone sent in a question of your omni-channel is in a lot of retailers, you're online, you're grocery. How do you manage everything? How do you manage all those different ways of selling?
It's one of the most difficult parts of the business is that, you know, sometimes in, you know, for example, in the US, a lot of times people will launch and they'll go into one retailer and that's what they do.
Yeah.
You know, whereas we're in countless retailers at countless levels, our own websites, we have four different websites, you know, and then retailers in the US. It's really challenging. And that's where the team, you need specific teams to focus on specific channels. And if you don't have a team, then you need to specifically focus a specific amount of time per channel.
Okay. And it's good. Great advice. Yeah.
And plan and like plan what you expect from the channel and what you expect from this channel and how you're going to keep each channel happy. Because they are different and they're both, it's really good to have an omni-channel business. And it's, they say it's really what's needed in terms of having actually good exposure and good depth into a market. But it's actually about spending the time on the channel because everybody has a favorite channel, you know, everybody kind of like,
what's your favorite?
Well, I say I love retail, but then I love our own connection with our customer. And it's, you know, your retailers are so important. And so it's about making sure that they're happy and that you're listening to them and that you're not, you don't know better. You just don't know better than somebody who is working in retail who like they know their business inside out and you listen to them.
Question from Sean. He was reading The Founder Brand this week and he's interested to know how much of Spotlight success does Lisa put down to their personal brands driving the company forward?
I think it was very important for Vanessa and I to be present as part of the brand. And the reason is that so much of oral care is this created by dentists, made by dentists. And it's like, who are these people? And, you know, I think I can speak a lot more plainly and simply than a brand can, you know. And so I have an opportunity as a dentist, I can have a conversation because I know what I'm talking about and I know I've done my research. I know what the oral care industry looks like. And so someone needs to have a conversation. Someone needs to be to push something forward. And it's very hard for a brand to do that actually without a person. And the fact that we're dentists, we want to talk about oral health. We want to talk about oral education and drive awareness. In terms of our personal brand, that doesn't really, I think people like the fact that we're human and that we're like real people and we're not in a white coat, finger wagging, you know, because that's archaic when it comes to any healthcare. So I think Vanessa and I as part of the brand is really, really important because it makes it more accessible. We will go on and answer questions. You know, we are there to meet our customers where they need us. And that's really important. And that was very important to Vanessa and I because we want to be transparent and open. Can't talk to a to a website, you know.
In terms of, we know the question, in terms of investment, was it hard to fund a business like this? Because it would, you'd imagine it's quite expensive to launch a business like this. Someone sent in a question, was it hard to get initial funding?
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, the way really Spotlight started at the beginning, we were profitable. You know, we're never running a business at a loss and, you know, like throwing money at it. We set it up, it had to make profit, it had to work. Obviously, as you start to expand overseas and you start to go into thousands of retailers, you know, you're going to need capital. There's stock, the way freight is, it's like you just need money. But I think the foundation of the work had been done in terms of, we'd spent 4 years with a profitable business. So we weren't a kind of, you know, we weren't losing money. And so that's very reassuring. I think people a lot of times think that raising money, you know, it doesn't matter if you're not making money or you're not profitable. And I know every industry is very different. And, you know, obviously, you know, you've got tech and stuff like that, and they need money to even get out the door. But in my experience, investors like to see profit. And and they like to see sensible business plans and sensible growth. And you can grow too fast, you know. So I think, you know, I think that those fundamentals are very important to get right, like in terms of a business. And again, that's something we really had to learn as we went. So it was very difficult. And even in the most successful businesses, and I'm friendly with, you know, founders, particularly in the US, who have incredibly big successful businesses, and it might come down to one or two investors. It's all about, you know, what they want in that moment. Now, we have been very lucky, and we have had, honestly, the best experience when it comes to investors. And I couldn't say that enough. And we have been lucky that we have had, you know, investors when we needed them. And it's also really important to have the right investors, that it's not just, you need someone to be there with you when you are in a challenge and you do need help. But yeah, it's not as easy. It's very time consuming, and it's very distracting from the business overall, because it just pulls your attention. So I think getting the fundamentals is very important, and then looking for the right investor who has the same long-term goals as you.
And as you grew abroad, then where you've kind of launched into America now, like, maybe just talk a little bit about that. We're kind of almost come to the end now, but I'd like to kind of understand that, because that's been a lot of in the news recently about your expansion into the US. How has that been going?
So we really launched in the US just as COVID hit. So we launched into Ulta Beauty, which is one of the biggest beauty retailers. It's like Sephora. It's Sephora's biggest challenger as such. And so we launched into Ulta just as kind of, you know, COVID hit. We were also then in CVS. So again, with Ulta, we started with a smaller number of stores. And then we grew, and now we have full distribution. So they've, you know, bit by bit brought us into all their stores and expanded the products. We're in 3,000 CVS stores. We're actually going into 7,000 CVS stores soon. So it's just like, it's a scale that is really hard to wrap your head around. And then we're also in Target, on Target.com. But, you know, it's with the US, when you're dealing with retailers like that, it's logistically huge deal, you know, trying to get to, you know, DCs and trying to, you know, wrap your head around 7,000 stores is kind of incredible. So there's a whole other side of that business that has nothing to do with product. It's all about logistics and efficiency, you know. And these are huge retailers, and, you know, they're not that flexible. They can't be, you know what I mean? They're not that flexible.
You so fit into you their schedule.
Yeah, you fit in. And if you're late, you know, it's not good for you. Now, thankfully, we have a fantastic logistics team, but I've heard horror stories where people are late and they get charged, you know, $1 million for being late. It's just, the scale is so big. You need to be ready if you're looking at that.
Take me no messing around. So you've gone deep in expertise. You've gone hired deep and deep expertise in each channel. It's fascinating to hear how quickly it's grown, but also how deeply you've gone in such a short space of time. What does the next kind of 18 months to 2 years? I know we live in a crazy world, right? Does it like get out your crystal ball and shine it up and just tell me the future? But like for you in the next 18 months, what would you like to see happen for Spotlight?
I think, you know, really Ireland is such an important market for us. It's just obviously, you know, very important to Vanessa and I, very special to us. You know, it's really where we learn so much about, you know, what our products, what our customers like and what they, you know, what they want more of. And so that's just, you know, really important to us. And a lot of our team are in Ireland. About 30% of our business is actually in the UK. So we spend a lot of time in the UK, and I was in London a couple of weeks ago. So probably spending more time in the UK, and that's primarily just on our own site. So kind of probably expanding a little bit more into the UK and probably taking on a good UK retail partner. And then in the US is going to be a huge focus for us. So we're in discussions with, you know, a very significant retail partner, and that's like very exciting for us to get over the line. And so I already see spending a lot more time in the US. I think again, it's that momentum. There's momentum behind it, and it's going really well. We have an amazing team like that works with us across Ireland, UK, and the US. And honestly, as well, getting to know the team a little bit more, because like we've probably taken on 70% of our team members without meeting them.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah, the company's coming back together going, oh, you're taller. It's incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, I think getting to know them a little bit more, getting to spend more time with the team, like that's what I'm really looking forward to as well, because it's great having successes, but it's only great when you're with people you want to share it with. You know what I mean? It's such a transient moment.
Yeah.
The little wins. And that's why it's so great to have Vanessa, and we have another founder, Barry, as well. So like the three of us together, like we're best friends, like, you know, and it's a journey that, you know, nobody, you can't explain unless you're in it, you know.
Yeah.
But our team are right there with us. And like, that's the best part about Spotlight, is the people that I get to spend my time with, you know, and so, like incredible people. So that's what I'm looking forward to, spending more time with the team and getting to know them more and more.
Excellent. I have two final questions for you, two quick fire questions. The last one is to recommend a book. So have a little think about that for a second. And the second last one is, if you were chatting to Lisa of 6 years ago, what would be the one thing you'd tell her to look out for?
I think, you know, not to second guess myself maybe so much, you know. I mean, I always loved working, I literally worked since I was 13, like in bars, restaurants, and to really follow what you love. I loved working. I set up my own practice when I was 24. I love it. I love learning how different businesses work. It's my passion, you know? And so I would say, like, just go for it and trust yourself. And where everybody was going to Australia, I always felt, oh gosh, should I be going to Australia? I was like, no interest in going to Australia. I don't want to. It's just not me. Like, actually, just do what you want. Do what you like, you know? And I think actually in your 22 to do what you want to learn. And, you know, maybe I'm such a nerd, but like, I think, you know, to learn and to jump into education and to do more and try a different job, that's very exciting, as well as like going traveling and all that, you know. So I would say just trust yourself and just go with it.
Yeah, definitely. I think definitely as you get a bit more experience in business, you're like, it's fine. Just, you don't have to be all things to all people. Just go what you feel. Go with your gut. The gut is a big one, but we kind of ignore it. Fear. Last one. Is there a book you'd recommend to people listening that has an impact on you personally or professionally?
I love to read, actually, and I read a lot of fiction as well. I find it very distracting.
Yeah, I do as well.
I really get immersed in fiction. I think there's certain books like, you know, I think The Laws of Human Nature. I think it's what I see, and I have team members, is that, you know, you cannot be held back by your own personality. Don't hold yourself back. Like, be aware. And I think I grew up with a very amazing family who, and, you know, like really diligent and hardworking. And I just thought that was normal. You know what I mean? I thought that was just the way everybody was. And everybody's so different in good and bad ways, you know? And that to be aware and to be empathetic and to be very emotionally aware. It's so important. It's so important to be able to read a situation, yeah, in work, but in life, like, you know, and I think that if you don't, you can have all the skill sets you want. People don't, if you're not aware of yourself, if you're not aware of other people, and or if you don't understand, you could have another person, another team member, and they trigger you or they say something that really irritates you. You have to understand that's actually your responsibility, you know, and to start taking ownership, you know, of your own stuff as well. So I'm really into like self-awareness and kind of learning more about yourself and other people. And I think that's a really good book. And I think the people, you know, you have to own your own side of the road.
I love it. It's funny.
You'll never go further.
I looked over my shoulder there. I was like, I think that's over my right shoulder. It is. It's on the shelf right behind me here. It's incredible.
Everybody should read that book.
It's class.
Everybody should read that book.
It's absolutely class. You nailed it there. The self-awareness piece. We always think, oh, if only that person was a bit different, I'd be happier. Never true. It's all about yourself. It's all about what you're interpreting that person. Why do you think they're slighting you? Why do you think they don't, you know, it's a class book, an absolute class recommendation. That's never been recommended before. It's always nice to get a new recommendation. Lisa,
oh, good.
That was absolute class. Where can people learn a little bit more about Spotlight or even go and get some?
Sure. So you can follow us on Instagram and or you can go onto our website where you can learn everything about the brand and all the products and where we came from and how we source everything. So it's on spotlightoralcare.com. Yeah, we'll be there.
Brilliant. Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was so lovely to talk to you.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Lisa. As she said, go onto their website, check it out, and you can pick it up in most stores across Ireland. I'll be back here next Monday for the Idea Lab. Until then, have a fantastic week, and I'll talk to you then.